right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there, good evening. Firstly, big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, November 3rd, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And coming up between now and the new music show at 7, we have a feast of football on the way. Alan Cawley, Stephen Elliott and great Graham Gartland trot through all the big Premier League talking points and review the League of Ireland Premier Division season. We'll be speaking to former Armagh player and manager Joe Kernan to reflect on the sad news today of the passing of one of Gaelic football's legendary stars, Eugene Nudie Hughes.
Yes, Joe, a good friend of one of Monaghan's greatest ever players. Staying with GAA, we also have the chance for one lucky listener to win €400 with thanks to PwC. And of course, we'll round up our weekend sporting highlights. As always, you can get in touch by texting 51552 or message us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Good evening, listeners. Good evening, Ruby Walsh. How's the fun?
Great, Shane. Yourself?
Very well. Very well. Very well. We are in the company, as is tradition of a Monday. Alan Cawley. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm flying a chain. And Ruby, how's all?
All very good. Shane's good in good form. Shell's finished the year well. European football, etc, etc. Smiling for a change.
That was sorted for. Like, I had the feet up. Now, I must say, I was a bit unwell over the weekend, but I did have the feet up metaphorically and mentally, saying European football's already secured.
Shane, I know you love to downplay a lot of this as a fan, but I have to be honest with you. I'm so impressed with Joey O'Brien, and I think there's even bigger and better to come, because the way they finished, how strong they've been since the second part of the season. And I know we'll get into the chat later on, but their home form, if you think Shamrock Rovers won the league by 3 points to Derry, but Shelburne were only 7 points behind, and their home form, they only accumulated 30 points and Shamrock Rovers had 39 points at home. Whereas you look at their away, I think it was 29 points they accumulated. That was really the difference, the home form. And that was, in fairness, in the early part of the season when Damien obviously didn't get off to a great start. The second part of the season, they were so strong. So I'm expecting big and bold things from Shelburne and Joey
Bryan.
There
was a lot
year.
Of expectations in St Pat's and how they finished the previous season.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's fair. But I just think he's done really well, Joey O'Brien. No, really
he
well.
He has. Perhaps he might be in order for manager of the year. Who knows? Now, if Steve Bradley does a double, I'll hold my hands up on that one and say, perhaps, but we will see.
Perhaps. Alan Cawley, and no doubt you spent the weekend on the couch, absorbing, looking at everything. What was the highlight?
I broke it up for about a couple of hours to go to Drogheda on Saturday, Ruby, but I was straight back then. And my highlight, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, but you know how much I love Willie Mullins.
Do you know what? Does this revolve around the Breeders' Cup?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, let's just pause and just have a listen to this.
3-1. Around the far turn, Salawi, Goliath, and Minihawk. Rebels Romance needs a place to go behind them. Rebel Red has circled up on the far outside. On the rail, it is Amalak, and then redistricting. And they're into the stretch. And the filly takes charge. It is Minihawk who comes off the turn in front. Rebels Romance comes to take her, and that's the Gold Diamond. It's charging down the middle of the turf course and goes by them all. Ethical Diamond has taken the lead, and at 25-1, Ethical Diamond wins the turf in a final time of 2:25.45, a Del Mar course record.
Well, I've always said winning the Grand National with Patrick on board.
Well, your son, Patrick.
Yeah, this might come second best. Yeah, I mean, What a! I just couldn't believe it. I was counting the horses around him going down into the last bend, and I thought, Dylan, have you gone mad going around the outside? But he did tell me he was going to do that. And then when I just looked at where he was and the speed he was going, I said, this is going to be on. And next thing, like I said, a furlong down, this is over. Couldn't believe it.
What was it that made you think, I'm going to go to the Breeders' Cup with this horse?
I'll have to give a shout out to David Casey, who's down in Australia, mining Absurd.
He's your assistant trainer.
Yeah, and he does a lot of my entries, and he said, let's do the Breeders' Cup with this fellow. And I said, a bit mad, but it was, you know, David was instrumental in that choice.
Dylan, congratulations. We just heard from Willie Mullins. Before the race, he had told our announcers that if he could be fourth, fifth, or sixth, he'd be happy. How did you pull this off, Dylan?
It's unbelievable. Trainer performance, he's something else. He was expecting him to run a nice race. Be placed would be huge. I was quietly confident myself beforehand.
What made you quietly confident? You hadn't ridden him before.
Yeah, his form is very, very good. He's a horse that likes to relax, and when he can relax, he can do everything good. He won the Ebor this year on his last start in York, and it was like he joined in at the two-pole, and it takes a good horse to do that. The trip was never going to be a problem. From a wide draw, we decided we'd take back and relax. Thankfully, we went a good gallop, and it was a nice, smooth race for me. This is unbelievable. It doesn't get much better than this. To have a few rides here is huge, but to win one of the biggest races here for the weekend is massive. So a massive thanks to everyone who's got me here, and for the connections and Willie to have the faith in me. It's a big wearing in there, so I was delighted to get the opportunity, and thankfully we paid it off.
Now, I do apologise for cutting across you, Alan.
That is totally fine.
But to hear some great commentary, some brilliant, very, very unique commentary from the Breeders' Cup there.
I like it.
It's different. It's different. It's unique. As Dylan Brown-McGonagall there alluded to, just having the faith for Willie to show in him and Champion Jockey, and what a few days and few weeks it's been for him, Ruby. But for Willie, he was on cloud nine, even from any of the interviews you saw.
Yeah, he was. And look, as he said, if I guess the hope was that he could run in the money, Shane, and cover his costs. I don't think anybody in Willie's Willie or David or anybody thought that he could go and do what he did. But it was brilliant. I mean, it's the biggest stage. I mean, to look at the list of trainers that were training winners of the Breeders' Cup, Aidan O'Brien, Charlie Appleby, Bob Baffert, Bill Mott, Todd Pletcher. I mean, it's not the usual playground you associate with Willie Mullins, but he was in the middle of them, and it was magic. It was brilliant to watch. Alan, you enjoyed it too.
Oh, I loved it, Ruby. Yeah, I really did, and all Willie's achievements. But just, I suppose, you're after listening out some incredible trainers there, the elite level trainers really on the flat. Like, and I know it might be a hard one for you to answer, Ruby, because you're obviously in Willie's camp, but just how big of an achievement is it? Like,
huge. I mean, you're talking different firepower. Like, Willie, obviously, to people that would know National Hunt Racing, they would think, well, he has huge, huge budget. He can mop up over jumps. But the budget required in National Hunt Racing, Alan, it's a bit like the Electricity League and the Premier League.
I had a feeling you were going to say that, but that's fair. I understand that, yeah.
And they're the budget. So Willie is playing with an Electricity League and he's gone and won in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And or a budget, I mean. And that's what you're talking about. I mean, it is quite different, the investment in both sports. Like, one is a completely an industry, which is flat racing, and it, you know, it revolves around the breeding industry, whereas jump National Hunt Racing is more of a sport. But it is an incredible achievement. I mean, to source the horse, he got him in Ireland, went trained him as a jumper and headed back on the flat with him. But like, as Willie says, David said we'd go to the Breeders' Cup, but Willie left out was David wanted to go to Ascot a month ago for a Group 3 to see if he was good enough to go to the Breeders' Cup. Willie just omitted that part, because when Willie told his owners that they were going to go to the Breeders' Cup, the owners thought it was a great idea, and then Willie decided, well, there's no point in finding out in Ascot in the prep race if we're not good enough, so we'll just scrap that prep run and we'll head straight to the Breeders' Cup. So they headed on, and look, it was brilliant. David's obviously down in Australia looking after Absurd, who runs in the Melbourne Cup at 4 a.m. tomorrow, and I was talking to him this morning. He said Willie got off the plane and had slept for 13 out of 16 hours from Los Angeles to Melbourne. I'd say by the time he got on the plane after the Melbourne Cup, he'd given it a good run.
You know what I loved as well, Ruby, was and Willie kind of, and we've spoken about this before when we were asking you, just in terms of plans for the races or tactics, if you like. And I love the fact that he said Dylan had told him he was going to go wide, but he left him off, even though he's a young jockey, inexperienced, who's having a great time of it. But for that level of race, he is inexperienced. But there was no kind of interference in, no, Dylan, this is what you should do. He just left him off, made his own decision, and gave him such confidence in probably doing that.
Yeah, he did. The only thing he did change maybe in the tactics was Dylan kind of thought maybe he'd go forward if he broke well enough. And Willie said, no way. And I was saying the same to him, and so was David. No, go back, go in. You're riding for place money here, so you make sure you're finishing, and then be as brave and as confident as you like. And I guess he just gave him a little bit of confidence, but his execution of it from halfway, you could see that he was starting to come on the bridle. It had gone very, very hard up front, and the ones at the front end were starting to slow a little bit, but like, he waited all the way down the backside. Round the bottom turn, he switched him out, and then when he opened him up, the horse just flew for him. It was a brilliant performance, and he broke a track record. It's not a fluke. Like, he didn't run by horses that were falling in a hole, because he's finished so strongly himself. But look, it is an amazing victory for Willie to think he could go to the Breeders' Cup and win $2.5 million dollars to the winner.
£2.9 million was the winner. Just under £2.4 million is what Willie got for the British Trainers Championship. So even you see
that's what I mean. He'd earned more in one race at Delmar than he'd get in the whole of the national hunt season last year, which included Grand Nationals and races like that.
And for Ethical Diamond, not from 2 hour jumps in Britain last term, and earned £860 for coming seventh in the Scottish Champion Hurdle.
is this something, Ruby, that I suppose with the evolution of Willie over the last number of years and the success that he's had, is it something that we will probably see more of in terms of going for the British Championship on a regular basis in the national hunt like we've seen in the last couple of years, and obviously races like this then in terms of the flat?
It depends on the horses, Alan, and the owners you have. So the HOS Syndicate wanted horses that could be dual purpose, and Willie has plenty of owners like dual purpose horses, but you actually have to source them and buy them as well. So you're buying them as 3 and 4 year olds, but it's probably proven that, and it's because of the way the business is on the flat, but you look at the age profile, say, of the Melbourne Cup tomorrow. Al Riffe is the favourite. He's five years of age. Like, you have 6, 7, 8 year olds in the Melbourne Cup. We never get that in European racing. You rarely get it in American racing. They're always 2 year olds, 3 year olds, 4 year olds. They're gone to stud, be they stallions or mares. That's the industry. And we probably never get to see the true potential of horses. It's like letting players grow up to become adults.
Okay.
Flat horses tend to be raced younger and go to stud much younger because that's the industry. But you just think that, God, if they were allowed time to develop and mature, you could have more Ethical Diamonds if you could find them.
And the last one for me is the double on tonight.
Well, the 28 mils of rain in Melbourne, I was talking to David this morning, which was last night in Melbourne, and it had 28 mils of rain. There was another 20 mils forecast, so the going has been updated to a soft, and a number in America, in Australia even, so it's a soft 7.
Is that good news?
That's probably good news for the European horses, all right, yeah. Look, he's been there twice before, Absurd. He ran well in the Caulfield Cup 2 weeks ago. He has his chance, but I'd say Slow Ground is going to give Al Riffe a big chance for Joseph O'Brien, coming from stall 19, and Goody Two Shoes as well, who comes from stall 20. Wayne Lorden has gone down to ride her for Joseph as well, so she has a big chance. And Half Yours will probably be the best of the Australians. He'd have a big chance in Slow Ground as well.
Gentlemen, from the Stars of Racing, I did mention in our intro, and we will continue our highlights chat, and we will be joined by Stephen Elliott very shortly to chat Premier League and Graham Garton a little bit later on the League of Ireland. But to the Stars of Gaelic Football, I did mention €400 cash to be won for one lucky listener. So, the PwC All-Star Awards take place at the RDS this Friday. This last season, for sure, has been a tough one for the selection committee. And to find out if they got it right, make sure you watch the PwC All-Star Awards. They're live on the telly, RT1, 7:30 this Friday. All the country's top GAA football and hurling talent are going to be there, and we honour their excellence, commitment and passion for their sport. And if you can show your excellence now in terms of your GAA knowledge, you could be in with a chance to win yourself €400 in cash, all thanks to PwC. If you fancy winning it, simply answer this question. Can you tell us who the winner was of the 2024 PwC GAA GPA Football Senior Player of the Year? Was it A, Galway's Paul Conroy, or B, Armagh's Barry McCambridge? Text us now on 51552 with your answer and name. As always, competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. So €400 to be won there. If you know the answer, do text in for that one from the Stars of Racing, the Stars of Gaelic Games. Did Alan Gazump you there with your weekend highlight, Ruby?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Sorry,
Ruby. It's a bit unlike me, Alan, to have a low light, but I did. I felt the rugby was a low light.
It's a low light for me most times I watch it.
What is no. I just thought
the whole spectacle was a bit of a low light, to be fair.
It was, and obviously the mess up they had with communications on the pitch. Referee took him 6 minutes to get a look at Ty Burns' yellow card, which was turned into a red card. And there's loads of ways of looking at that, and people with better rugby brains than mine can dissect that, and we get a chance tomorrow, Shane. But I just thought, I played rugby as a kid, but Ireland are a top 3 or 4 nation in the world in rugby. But to perform at the highest level in any sport, you have to maximise the opportunities. And Ireland's attacking line-out has fallen off a cliff. I mean, you can't win your own line-out. You have no attacking platform. And if we're going to compete against the best nations in the rugby world, that line-out has to be fixed. We have some incredibly talented players, but to watch the Irish line-out of the weekend was was shocking, and I thought that was a low light in a professional sport, not to win in your own lineouts.
Yeah, the whole set piece, I think the breakdown, I think it was 86 carries, no line breaks. It was a bit of a disjointed performance, and I know people say it's pretty much pre-season, a lot of players coming in a bit undercooked and everything else besides, but it's the first time Ireland are hosting the top three, so New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, top three from the Southern Hemisphere, and Japan as well thrown in, of course. So a lot on the line, there's World Cup ranking points and everything else, so these aren't just, I know some of the
people like me.
The discourse online might call them. Sure, it's only a friendly. It's not. It's an international test match, Alan Colley, and there's a lot on the line in terms of rankings and momentum and everything else, and blooding players through. Paddy McCarthy made his debut, but Andy Farrell back from the Lions into the Ireland setup, or returning to the Ireland setup. So a lot to.
Andy, we believe he'll get it right, but I do think that was a low light. Shane, yourself, from a highlight point of view, or a low light, whichever way you want to go.
I enjoyed the final day of the season, the League of Ireland season. I know we'll be chatting a bit later, but just in terms of teams going into it, level on points, looking for European football, teams going in, level on points, looking to avoid the relegation.
It was drama, wasn't it?
There's drama, because we knew Shamrock Rovers was going to win the league, and we knew that from quite a while out. So it was nice to have a lot of things on the line. We knew Cork City were going to be relegated, and they have the cup final to look forward to, but that was thoroughly enjoyable. In Athlone Town Stadium, Treaty United and Bray Wanderers played out the playoff final for First Division, and Bray came out on top. They'll play Waterford and Talca Park on Friday for the right to play Premier Division football next season. But Justin Ferragi's goal.
Great goal.
An acrobatic goal. So
in the 90th minute as well.
Yeah, it was...
the timing was everything.
It was one for the purists, I think, and the timing was absolutely brilliant. So credit to Justin and to Bray, and best of luck to both Bray and Waterford. I think Dylan Brown-McBonwell, I know we heard from him on the show last week. Like, I'm not just going off the easy one here. So I agree with both of you. The racing. It was a great achievement. And he's just... I don't know him personally. I've never met him, but just hearing from him when you interviewed him, Ruby, he was on Sunday Sports yesterday with Brendan McArdle, and he just seems like such a nice fella.
He is, and he wanted to be at the Curry yesterday afternoon to be crowned champion.
Flying by in that room,
He dusted out as Delmar, which is beside San Diego. There was a car waiting from after he got out of Ethical Diamond. Got to LA in time to make the flight back to Dublin, and he only came back to literally to get the trophy. Now, that said, he probably thought he would have been going to Australia to ride Al Riffin in the Melbourne Cup, but still the effort to come back and, I suppose, be there with his parents and his family and thank all those that supported him. You have to admire that drive as well. He just dusted out of San Diego and was back on the Curry yesterday to get his champion jockey trophy. So
another young lad I have to give a mention to while we're on good young lads. Johnny Kenny scoring yesterday and playing brilliant as well.
Great
in
header.
The game against Rangers.
Yeah.
He's obviously from Sligo, a little village called Riverstown Ruby. Lovely family. I used to grow up looking at his dad, and he was our local hero in the showgrounds. And to see them getting the pleasure out of seeing their son score for Celtic now, it must be an unbelievable feeling. And it couldn't happen to a nicer family. They're absolutely lovely, and to see Johnny scoring, and I think he has a great chance now of maybe featuring in the games upcoming against Portugal. Ferguson is obviously injured. He will be selected. He's in great form, and I'd have no qualms whatsoever about seeing him lead the line, because he's, like Ruby said about young Dylan Brown-McMonagall, he's a brilliant attitude. He's a hungry young player. He wants to do well. He wants to achieve on the biggest stage, and it was a great moment for him yesterday.
And another lad who's taken an opportunity that's absolutely flying too is Darragh O'Creefallon. Mm. Obviously, when Rachel Blackmore retired this year, he took over as first jockey to Henry de Bromhead. He won the big chase in Down Royal and Envoy Allen at the weekend, which was a great training performance. A treble in Cork yesterday. He has 62 or 3 winners written this season. 61. He's Paul Townend is on 29, Jack Kennedy on 33. He has a big lead in the Jump Jockeys Championship in Ireland, and he's riding at an incredible strike rate. His strike rate's 18%, but if you backed every one of his horses out, he's at 333 rides, he'd be up €58.44 for
incredible.
a level euro stake. That is incredible. When you think, like, the Boat Jack and Paul would be a huge minuses, even though they've had less rides because they ride shorter priced horses. Mm. Like, he's won on some big price horses to have himself that far in front.
With that as well, Ruby, is Henry de Bromhead going to be Willie's closest challenger this year, because he's got off to an unbelievable start this season?
He's absolutely flying. But like everything, Al, like soccer teams, like even Willie's horses who are going okay, but the National Hunt ones aren't flying just yet. There comes in peaks and troughs, and Henry's will at some point have to wane a little bit, and then they'll come back. But look, he's making hay while the sun is shining, and a brilliant training performance with Envoy Allen at the weekend to win the Bet Victor Chase in Down Royal for the third time.
Final mention as well in our highlights before we welcome Stephen Elliott to the conversation and chat about the Premier League. Fionnuala McCormack, top 10 finish in the New York Marathon. We were talking about the marathon last week, Alan, yourself and Austin. Anyone who competes in a marathon, first off, is just an absolute warrior in my eyes. Anyone who can actually complete a marathon, but top 10 finish for Fionnuala McCormack. So great stuff. I mentioned Stephen Elliott is standing by. We can turn our attention to football and chat Premier League. Do you know, before we chat about the Premier League, would be remiss of me not to mention Stephen Elliott, manager of Wexford, your first season managing in the League of Ireland. How difficult is it managing in the League of Ireland, and what surprised you? What expectations did you have going into the season, Stephen?
Listen, I would have been an avid watcher of the League of Ireland when I played in the UK, and obviously being involved in the last couple of years you mentioned there. My first year as manager really opened up my eyes. I listened to you speaking there about obviously all the kind of twists and turns there in the last day of the season in the Premier Division, and obviously Treaty and Bray playing out the final of the Fourth Division playoff. For me, I've absolutely loved it. Obviously, in at Wexford, it was a great opportunity for me to kind of go in at first team level and learn about the kind of management side of things. Like I would have a fair experience coaching and different levels, mainly with youth kind of teams over in the UK. Obviously, in at St. Pat's last year, but no, if you ask me where I am now compared to when I got the job around this time last year, I've a hell of a lot more knowledge, and if anything, this season has just been a huge learning curve for me. I think working with the players that we have at Wexford has been fabulous. We've a really young group, and it was something that opened up my eyes, but something that, listen, I don't regret in the slightest. It's something that I absolutely love. Probably the best thing I've ever done in football is going into management, and I say that kind of, I don't say that lightly.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant setup down in Ferry-Carrick, and admittedly now it's a couple of years since I was down there, but some brilliant things happening with Wexford, and obviously you were watching on the playoffs, and you'll be gunning to go again and hopefully be aiming for those playoffs at least, I suppose, Stephen.
Yeah, definitely. This season we just missed out on the last game of the season. Treaty beat us in a kind of a playoff before the playoffs came. Probably one step too far for us, but no, I think over the course of the season we've a very young group. There's a lot of experience picked up both from the staff and by the players, and I think obviously going into the season, going into next season, we'll be a lot more prepared for. And obviously there'll be some top teams in the league again next year. Obviously Cork City coming down, potentially Waterford and Bray. So it's going to be exciting again next year. And ultimately everybody's aim in the First Division is to get into the Premier Division at some stage. But it's important that the club is prepared for getting into the Premier Division when they do that. And to be fair, at Wexford, there's really good foundations behind the scenes. There's a new ground coming up in a couple of years. The people working at the club, there's a plan in place rather than kind of just jumping in and trying to get up and then probably potentially come back down. There's a real kind of plan, so there's kind of sustainability at the club, and it's something that I'm delighted to be part of.
Well, I would say wish you all the best in the off season, but I don't think there's such a thing as an off season for managers and coaches when you're looking at PFA Ireland transfer list and everything else besides. Listen, let's turn our attention to the Premier League, and genuinely best of luck for the season ahead, Stephen, and congratulations for your first year in management. Arsenal, so they've won their past seven matches in all competitions without conceding a goal. If they keep another clean sheet at Slavia Prague on Tuesday, it'll match a 122-year club record. David Raya may currently have one of the easiest jobs in professional sport, able to enjoy all the fine defensive work in front of him as Burnley were kept at arm's length. They have a 6-point gap now. How confident are you, Alan, that Arsenal will just press on now? And who might you see as their main challengers? Is it sorting the shape up now? Arsenal, City, Liverpool, the top three? Or we still might have a romantic story of a Bournemouth or a Tottenham or a Sunderland?
No, I think we always see after roughly around 10 games that the league eventually taking shape, and it always is the big boys obviously that kind of sort themselves out. And as you said, the top three there at the moment is the three big boys. But Arsenal are my favourite.
Al. If Sunderland win tonight, they go second.
It's all the same. They've had a great start, Ruby, and we love to see those kind of fairy tale stories. So long may that continue as well. But in terms of winning a league, my eyes are only drawn to Arsenal. I've said that at the start, so of course I'm going to continue saying that. But they've been so good, and what I love about Arsenal, they can do a bit of everything. They're so powerful, so physical. If you want to try and battle them, they'll battle you. If you want to play them in a football match, they'll outplay you as well in that regard with how technical they are. So even looking at them Saturday, and Burnley, obviously, it's a big jump from the championship up to the Premier League. they dismantled Burnley really at ease. But the one thing that kind of stuck out from that game, and there's been so many kind of plaudits you could throw at Arsenal this year, but the one thing, the signing of Zubimendi has freed up Rice, and we're seeing more of Declan Rice's all-round game now, if you like, in terms of he's been an attacking midfielder now. And the one thing that was always labelled at him maybe in the last couple of years, that he doesn't get enough goals, you see the run that he made to get on the end of the cross and score the goal, and we're seeing that more frequently now. So they've so many facets to their game, the strength and depth that they have. You mentioned about the defensive statistics there. They've only conceded 3 goals, so they're a powerhouse at the moment, and they're going to take some stopping.
Just Ruby mentioned Sunderland there, and considering we do have the great Stephen Elliott on the line, how heartening and exciting is it to see Sunderland not only back in the Premier League, but as Ruby mentioned there, win tonight, and you're right up there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable really to think. And listen, I know you can point to the chairman coming in and spending a lot of money, but no, I think Sunderland fans are in dreamland at the moment. I think start of the season, kind of Sunderland pick up a few results and you don't get too carried away. I think supporters of Sunderland were probably thinking, yeah, get the points on the board early doors and see where we go from then. But like you mentioned there, they beat Everton. It's a home game. They haven't lost a home this season. Everton are off the pack of 2 defeats. They win tonight, they win the second. I'm not saying Sunderland are going to keep that up till the end of the season, but listen, they have some good players there. The recruitment at Sunderland has been really good. I know they've spent money, but I think they're getting a lot for the money. And the signing of Xhaka, I think he's been outstanding for them. Experienced midfield player, kind of won titles all around Europe, international experience, and he's a real leader for the group. And it's a young group at Sunderland, but I think that the signing of Granit Xhaka has really lifted the club. And there's a real belief there. And you'll see tonight the place will be absolutely bouncing. And I wouldn't surprise me if they turned Everton over again.
Al, 40 is the magic number to stay in the Premier League. You look at the last couple of years, those that came up went straight back down. Sunderland win tonight and they're halfway there. That is some start from them.
Yeah, and I think even that figure has been lowered in recent years, Ruby. So that used to be always the kind of point that everybody would be aiming for, but I don't think that's the case now. But certainly in terms of Sunderland, as you see, if they were to get 20 points on the board after 10 games, it would be an unbelievable start. And it is great to see. I would echo everything that Stephen said in terms of the job that the manager has done, the recruitment. And I hope to God the Sunderland Till I Die series has been commissioned for this season as well, because it was one of the best documentaries we ever see. Working class people who absolutely love their club. So it's great to see, Ruby, but I'm just looking, like I mentioned there, about 10 games in that the league kind of takes shape. I also think it starts to take shape at the bottom as well, and despite the fact that Leeds, Burnley, Sunderland, as you say, have come up and have had good starts, particularly Sunderland, but you see Burnley now at 17th, Leeds at 16th, like I think they're being dragged right into where you would expect them to be, really. That's no disrespect to the clubs, but just the jump is so big. I fully expect Forest to get out of the mess they're in, with Dyche at the helm now, an experienced manager. Nuno getting a great win yesterday at West Ham, he'll put a shape on West Ham as well, and you'd see them climb up the table. So I would, even though they've had great starts, Ruby, and I hope it's not a statistic again this year where the 3 clubs that have come up get relegated, but I do think you're going to see Burnley and Leeds kind of down there fighting for the rest of the season.
Stephen, as someone that is currently in management, the scenes after Spurs' defeat to Chelsea with Van de Ven and Jed Spence not going over to acknowledge the fans and also seemingly ignoring Thomas Frank, how concerning was that? Are we making a bit too much out of it?
I think it is a bit disrespectful. Listen, I know we don't know exactly what was said or what went on at half time before the game or what was said during the game. We don't know the full story, but I think especially where all the cameras and the eyes on the Premier League, I think players have to have a little bit more know-how about them and a bit more self-awareness that people are watching them. And listen, everybody's disappointed when you lose a game. There's no doubt Spurs are disappointed. It was a big London derby losing to Chelsea, but I don't think that was a great look for the club. I think, listen, I watched them in the previous week against Everton where they were outstanding, got a great win. And to go from that to kind of them saying straight away a week later, it was poor. So, yeah, no, it didn't look great. But I do think there might be a little bit of a mountain make out of a molehill on that one. I just think we need to kind of keep an eye on that. But now, if I'm a manager and the players are doing that, you would have a chat. But maybe there's not as much to it as what people are making out.
I nearly cried when Stephen Kelly wasn't on tonight. Spurs had 3 shots in the whole game and 1 on target.
Yeah, I thought this might come up, and I'm glad it has, because I have a couple of Spurs fans in a WhatsApp group and I'm arguing with them every day of the week because they were all for Postecoglou and I'm all for Frank. And I think eventually he will get it sorted out, but if you look at them, and you're right, Ruby, it was terrible performance at home, and that's been the problem for them, because Spurs fans want you, they attack in expansive football, if you like. But the problem that Ange had in doing that, he left the door wide open at the back, and they were conceding goals left, right and centre, and ended up 17th, and they were a shambles week in, week out. So I think, to be fair to Thomas Frank, he's obviously new in 10 games, he's trying to sort out the defensive side of things, and if you look at them already, they've only conceded 8 goals, so he's already done a great job in that regard, the second best defence in the league behind Arsenal. Stephen will tell you as well, Ruby, the hardest part of the game is trying to create chances and score goals, and that's hopefully the evolution of this team, that he tries to obviously look at the attacking side of things, because they are very blunt at the moment in the attacking third. And some of the players, the new signings, Xavi Simons has been a major disappointment. I watched them live last week actually away in the Champions League, and they were dreadful. But I wouldn't, it, even though it was a bad result and the performance, and there's a lot of kind of eyes on Spurs at the moment, and as you say, those kind of stats, it's still not all doom and gloom. They're sitting fifth, they've the second best defensive record in the league, 17 points on the board. As I said, he's only in the door trying to put a stamp on things, so I wouldn't be jumping the gun with him just yet. I think he's a very good manager, as we've seen with Brentford. And Brentford used to attack well, and you think of Ivan Toney and Benrahma and a few of these lads, and Bueno. Yeah, so he'll eventually, I think, get that side of it right, Ruby. But if I was him, you can only start from the defensive side of things and build from there. And I think he's right in trying to sort that out first.
Start at the back and work your way forward. Yep. The chant used to be boring, boring Arsenal, but it's boring, boring Spurs now as we move on. Keith Andrews had a defeat, Stephen, with Brentford at Palace. He was ruined the set piece.
Yeah, it's one of them. I know Alan went through the teams there in and around the kind of relegation area after 10 games. And you look at Brentford, they're a team, listen, and this is no disrespect to Keith Andrews. I think he's done really well so far, but they're a team that you would think that could kind of fall into that category if they don't kind of get the points on the board earlier. Listen, I know he's done great, and he's gone in there, he's lost a lot of players, and he's managed to kind of bring a few in and get them gelled quite quickly. But it would have been a disappointing loss the weekend for them, because after picking up a great win in recent times against Liverpool, and you're thinking, yeah, can you kind of get a bounce back with these results, do you know what I mean? And then you kind of, listen, Palace, losing away to Palace is no disrespect. That's one of the toughest grounds to go, always has been over the years. Sellers Park is bouncing, but they got to pick themselves up. They've got a home game against Newcastle next week before the international break, and Newcastle look to be a team that are kind of out of sorts. They've lost a bit of confidence, and that could be a game they could look at to kind of add some more points to kind of pull them further away. But I just have a sneaky feeling Brentford might get sucked into that battle.
They might well indeed. Alan, Mo Salah was back on the scoreboard, silencing the critics.
Yeah, and it was good to see as well, Ruby. And I think the one thing that Slot did the other night that he probably hasn't been doing in recent weeks because of all the new signings, he went back to the tried and tested. And the only two that weren't part of that league-winning team was the goalkeeper, who he had to play because Alisson was injured, and Ekitike up front, who's obviously been in red-hot form as well, and Isak was injured. Everyone else was in the normal positions. You see Robertson playing left full, Bradley right full, the same midfield three that we'd seen in the league winning team last year. And they got a performance out of them as well that we're used to seeing throughout the whole of last season in terms of the energy and the intensity that they played at. So it was a good performance. They're back on track. And again, as I said about all the doom and gloom, they're sitting in third place, Ruby, so it's not all that bad as well with Liverpool. But they have fallen 7 points behind Arsenal, and already, even only 10 games into it, it could be a bridge too far.
Back to the same old team. No need to spend 500 million. Stephen, yeah. Elliott, thank you so much. Alan Cawley, you're staying with us. We have a quick break to take.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, the PWL Star Awards take place at the RDS this Friday, and you can have a chance to win €400 cash, all thanks to PwC. If you fancy winning the money, simply answer this question. Can you tell us who the winner was of the 2024 PwC GAA GPA Football Senior Player of the Year? Was it A, Galway's Paul Conroy, or B, Armagh's Barry McCambridge? Text us now on 51552 with your answer and name. As always, competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. We will reveal the lucky winner before the end of the show. Alan Cawley is still with us. Graham Gartland is on the line to chat. League of Ireland Shamrock Rovers crowned champions, fifth time in 6 years. Graham Gartland, has Stephen Bradley sufficiently handled and managed and chopped and changed in the lead up, in the run into the league, to ensure his side will be peaking for the cup final, do you feel?
He probably has, yeah. But I still think you have to go out and perform in the final. I don't think it's a given. I think Cork have probably done similar in the opposite way, in that they know they're going down a while. But the last two wins have come in the quarterfinal and the semi-final of the Cup. So they'll be going all out to make sure they print a performance on the day. Rovers have a European game on the Thursday to attend with away in Greece against AEK Athens. So how do you prepare for that, and how do you come back and recover going into the Cup final? But I think obviously last year is a different scenario. There they were probably, even though they were second and at the time, or challenging for the league title, sorry, and ended up finishing fourth. I think for Drogheda to be in a relegation playoff and then go and win the Cup, I think will Rovers will be aware of that. But I also think it was a different scenario, because I also think Derry were on a downward trajectory by the time the Cup final came around, and Drogheda felt the chance was there to be taken. Cork are already relegated. They've nothing else to play for, so they can go all out on the day. But I think Rovers will have enough, and I think the double means something to Stephen and the team. It's not something this team has achieved before, so they're obviously going to go all out to make sure they get the result. I think they'll rest players against AEK Athens to make sure their all guns are fired in on Sunday in the FAI Cup.
Yeah, 38 years since the double was achieved for Rovers. From the weekend, and perhaps the season, Alan Colley, is it fair to say that Sligo Rovers might be the story of, or one of the main stories of the season? So they beat Shamrock Rovers 2-1 in Tallaght at the weekend. 2026 will be the 21st consecutive season in the Premier Division. Only Pats and Bowes have a better current record. They were 12 points behind Galway in May, 11 points behind Waterford, and they end up finishing 7th.
Yeah, it's been an unbelievable turnaround the second part of the season, and all credit must go to John Russell, Ryan Casey, all his staff and the players. And I think the turnaround kind of what helped them really, I suppose, in that second part was the transfer window mid-season, because he was able to get young James McManus in, Ryan O'Kane, and a big one was Patrick McLean at centre-half, because it felt in that early part of the season, and as you said, they were so far behind Galway and Waterford, conceding goals left, right and centre, and it was looking bleak for them at that stage, that they had no real leader or voice in the dressing room. And to be fair to McLean, he's come in and he's given him that, and he's been a big presence, and then the attacking players have obviously delivered, but none more so than young Elding's been unbelievable all year. I think he scored 12 league goals, a lot of assists as well. He's been absolutely outstanding. And if you look at the last 5 games, they've picked up 7 points as well, where Galway have picked up 8 in those 5 games. The teams down there fighting, and ultimately Waterford have only picked up 5 out of the 15, and they've found themselves in that relegation playoff. So it's very hard for those teams down the bottom, because the likes of John Russell and Sligo Rovers, they lose McGinty, you lose more, and you lose Ellis Chapman, all their best players last year. It almost feels like you're having to start from scratch, and it'll be no different for them this year, because obviously Elding will go out of the building, maybe a couple of others as well. So it's very, very hard. They lost Reece Hutchison, who went to England playing for Crewe Alexandra as well. So when you take all that into consideration, he's done a great job to get them finishing 7th.
Rovers, Derry and Shells will be playing European football next season, perhaps Bowes if Shamrock Rovers win the Cup. So Bowes fans cheering on Rovers in the Cup final, who would have thought it? No European football for St Pat's. They finished the season a nil-all draw in Tolka Park. Mason Media send-off. It wasn't an ideal finish, and I'm sure Pat's fans will be frustrated with not achieving European football. I know we're reviewing the season here as such, Graham Gartlin, but how will Stephen Kenny cope with the pressure now in the off-season, knowing that European football was not achieved?
I think it'll be an eye-opener, because of how well he finished last season, that he can't go into this season with the same squad he has and hope to achieve success. I think last year, the killer for Pats was how well he finished last season, and it gave the club hope. It gave everyone around the club a belief that maybe we could challenge for the league title. To go from that to finishing in 5th and losing 10 games, I think they drew 13 and won 13. So it's just been bang average for them. They have a lot of attacking players, but I don't think they score enough goals outside of Mason Media. I don't think their midfielders chip in were enough. I don't think Power's done well at times, but he doesn't score enough goals, gets injury prone. Levy, who's brilliant, great dribbler and really exciting to watch, but his end product, whether it's assists or goals, isn't high enough for the positions he gets into. Forrester still produces the odd bit of magic here and there as well, but they need more from even the players around it. Mulroney doesn't have a lot of assists. El Bezzetti hasn't a lot of assists. Defensively, they've been alright. I think he's the second best defensive record in the league behind Shamrock Rovers. Might even be better than Rovers after the last few games, but they need more in an attacking sense, but they have a bit of security now.
but they just need more end product. And then the bigger worry is that the main goal threat, Mason Mealy, is gone now. So how do you replace them goals? Over the years, and you touched on Rovers, and Bowes have a little bit of a nail, they spread their goals around Shelbourne this year. There hasn't been any really out-and-out prolific goal scorer in the league. Probably Gary Twigg, Jason Bourne, Pat Hoban at Dundalk, maybe Seanan Maguire in his first stint at Cork. There hasn't really been a player that you think is going to get 15, 16 goals. And what Rovers have done and all the other good teams have done is they spread their goals across their midfield and their wide players. And Pats haven't been able to do that this year. So recruitment is going to be massive for them in the off-season. Who do you bring in that will give them a goal threat? Who do you bring in that will get assists and numbers? Because Mason Mealy is such a big loss for them. And obviously he's going on to bigger and better things where they've moved to Tottenham Hotspur over Christmas.
Adam, what about Drogheda? To defeat the Bulls at the weekend, you flipped that result around. It's a different season.
Yeah, it was disappointing for them. I was at the game, Ruby, and to be fair, it was one of those days where probably everything that could go wrong went wrong for them, and a couple of the things were out of their own hands because there was a decision that the referee should have made after a minute. John Mountney should have been sent off a straight red card for a really bad tackle on Conor Kane, and he never gave it to him. And I think the only reason he didn't was because it was probably after 58 seconds or whatever. But if it's a red card after a minute, it's a red card after 100 minutes. It shouldn't really matter. And then, I suppose, to add insult into injury then, he 15-20 minutes later, John Mountney, who had been booked for that tackle, then he took out, I think it was Conor Kane again, for a stonewall and yellow, and he never gave him the second yellow either, so he should have been sent off nearly twice. And Alan Reynolds made a change straight away because they knew they were after getting away with one Bohemians, and they brought on Niall Moran for Mountney. So that was a big decision that went against Drogheda. They actually scored from the resulting free kick and got themselves back into the game at 1-1. And then you're thinking they're in the game now and they can kick on from this. But Dennison, who's been unbelievable all season, to be fair to him, the goalkeeper, he had a poor game and he was the cause of two goals. And to be fair to Bohemians, even though he made the mistake, I think Bohemians deserve credit as well because they came off the back of a really bad result against Shelburne last week and it was fairly toxic around Dalymount. And Alan Reynolds was under serious pressure and they were getting abused, the players and him. And to be fair to him, to go up to Drogheda, which was a difficult place to go, as we all know all season, they stood up to every challenge that Drogheda threw at them in terms of the physical attributes that Drogheda have and corner kicks and long throws, and I thought James Clark was outstanding on the day, so they deserve credit as well. But just in terms of Drogheda and the unbelievable season, and it shouldn't take away from that as well, everybody was tipping Drogheda to go down at the start of the year, Ruby, for them to finish sixth mid-table, 51 points. I know it's really disappointing that they missed out on the last day, but they've had a great season overall, to be fair to them.
Alan, they need a goal scorer though.
Drogheda
15 draws. I know they only lost 9, but their goal difference at the end of the year ends up on 0. St. Pat's are plus 10, Bowes 9, Shells 11, Derry 13, Shamrock Rovers plus 23. I know they were solid at the back, but if they're going to elevate that, they need to score more goals.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Ruby. But to be fair, again, something like what we were saying with those teams down near the bottom, your best players are taken from you. And Douglas James Taylor was their centre forward and he was taken from them to go to Bohemians because obviously they're bigger clubs, bigger budgets, bigger salaries they're offering to the likes of the players who may be out of Galway or out of Sligo, out of Drogheda. So it's very, very difficult. And this has been their first year of full-time football as well. So Kevin's done an unbelievable job. But as you say, Ruby, in terms of moving that forward, which is the big challenge, and trying to push on again because he's overachieved finishing sixth, and defensively they have been sound, as you say, but in terms of maybe if they're pushing for that European place and scoring more goals than a Bohemians or Pats, you do have to either open the checkbook or just try and obviously in terms of moving that forward, it's a difficult challenge for them. So I wouldn't be critical of them on that one, but as you say, if you want to compete with the rest of them up the top, and it's very hard because the teams that are winning the league, obviously Shamrock Rovers, the resources they have, Derry City, Shelburne, not only the resources they already have accumulated, they've all qualified for Europe again this year and they're going to accumulate double, treble, even more than they already have. So it's a difficult one.
Gentlemen, we are going to have to end the conversation. Before we do, now I haven't forewarned you, so I'm appreciating that I'm putting you on the spot here, but moment of the season, Graham Gartland. And again, I know I haven't forewarned you here, but what was your moment of the season if you were to pick one?
That's a tough one. Really tough one. Probably Kerry's comeback against Sligo.
In the cup.
In the quarter. In the quarter final of the cup. I thought it was extraordinary for like to come back from with 30 minutes to go and basically beat a team that it's not only 3-0 up, but a whole division ahead of you and a whole, like, 100 years of establishment ahead of you as well, considering Kerry have only been in existence the last 5 years. So yeah, I'd probably go with that one.
Okay, well, it's fair, it was an absolutely astonishing comeback. Alan Colley, briefly, your moment.
I mentioned him earlier, and Owen Elding, on top of the brilliant season, he scored some unbelievable goals, and I was in Talca against Shelburne, and the goal he scored where he was nearly over at the dugout, and I was right behind it, an unbelievable strike into the top corner. And Michael Duffy deserves a mention. He's my player of the year. He does it year in, year out, never a word, never any trouble, never any hassle. A brilliant, brilliant player. So Michael Duffy as well.
Okay, I think a special mention for the Aviva Stadium match, just a record crowd at the start of the season, Rovers and Bows. Galway United having a flag with Ollie Horgan's face on it at the end was a really, really moving moment as well. And obviously, the moment of the season was Shell's comeback against Bows to secure European football in Davey Park. Alan Colley, Graham Gartland, thank you much for taking a short ad break. And then the great Joe Kernan is going to with us as we pay tribute to Nudie Hughes, one of Monaghan's greatest ever stars.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, legendary Monaghan footballer Eugene Nudie Hughes has died at the age of 67. The three-time All-Star, considered by many to be Monaghan's greatest ever footballer, was diagnosed with cancer in 2018. Hughes faced the battle with huge positivity, inspiring everyone who met him and supporting countless others. The Castle Blaney legend put his outlook down to the huge support he got from his own family and friends and the wider GAA clan. In 2024, Hughes was honoured by the GPA with a Lifetime Achievement Award. He was Monaghan's first All-Star winner in 1979, picked up two further personal accolades in 85 and 89. And Hughes was one of only a small number of players to have been recognised in defence and attack, his first coming as a cornerback, with the others coming as a corner forward. Here are some of his finest moments before we speak to the legendary Joe Kernan about the life of Eugene Nudie Hughes.
All this time by John Egan, whose way is blocked there. And Nudie Hughes again. This is certainly a Monaghan hero. And the rightful back takes it.
Declan Flanagan racing away, flame-haired player. He can certainly move, passes it to Nudie Hughes. Still Hughes. Hughes looks up. And a well-taken point by Nudie Hughes, much to the delight of the Monaghan supporters. It beats everybody, but Nudie Hughes has it. What can Hughes do now? Nudie Hughes, he looks up, and he gets the point. And the sides are now level. Caulfield now to Nudie Hughes. Still Nudie Hughes. Here's Murray. Nice flick inside to Hughes. And he gets the point.
Magnificent stuff there. The life of Eugene Nudie Hughes. As I mentioned, Joe Kernan joins us on the line, former Armagh player and manager. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I know Nudie Hughes was a close friend of yours, and you would have played against him, I said, in many county, club, and even Dr. McKenna Cup matches as well. What springs to mind when you do reflect on the playing career of such a legend?
Well, he was just a character, and that stood out from day one. But it was the way he could play in so many positions made him a great player, from cornerback up to corner forward. And I suppose the only place he never played was midfield, and he probably would have loved to get a chance at the middle of the field, knowing Nudie. He wouldn't have been afraid of it anyway. But no, a great player and had a fantastic career. I was lucky enough, I did play with him in the Railway Cup. The Railway Cup was going strong at the time, and Nudie was always up for the challenge of the Railway Cup. And, you know, he was just a great player, great player.
Yeah, Railway Cup winner in 84. He was the face of Monaghan football at a time when they were going through a bit of a resurgence, it's fair to say.
They were, yes. And a new management came in, Sean McHaig at the time, and they won, I think, three Ulster titles. But Nudie was a very important part of that team. As I say, he was sort of a sticking plaster for the team. You could put him in any position, and you knew you were going to get a good display from him. And he, in his own way, he was one of the leaders on the team. He never shied away from a challenge, and certainly was always looking for the ball. You know, he wouldn't hide. He wanted to be in the ticket of things and lead the team, and certainly he did that on every day he went out.
So, three-time All-Star, 79, 85 and 89. Like, some achievement to win three, but the winner from cornerback and corner forward, that probably sums them up best, does it?
That certainly does, you know what I mean? Like, some of us be lucky to play in one position and get an award, but he got it all over the field, and that just showed how what a class player he was and how adaptable he was and how you know, everybody knew Newdy. Newdy had great belief in himself. He'd never let you say anything bad that he wasn't up to the challenge. And certainly every time he went out on the field, it didn't matter full back or full forward or half forward, Newdy, you knew what you were going to get from him. He was sort of your banker every time you went out onto the field, you know.
An absolute legend. Joe Kernan, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us here on Game On. We really appreciate you taking the phone call. And of course, we send our condolences, our thoughts and prayers to all of Eugene Hughes' friends, family, teammates and everyone involved in Monaghan GAA. An absolute legend of the game. And as mentioned in Damien Lawler's online piece, probably Monaghan's greatest ever footballer. That is all we have time for. Briefly, I did mention you had €400 to win. If you could tell us the answer of who was 2024 PWC GAA GPA Footballer Senior Player of the Year. Was it A, Galway's Paul Conroy, or B, Armagh's Barry McCambridge? The answer, of course, Galway's Paul Conroy. And massive congratulations to Anne Green of Kilnamona, County Clare. €400 cash is on the way. That is all we have time for. Ruby and Marie is back 6 o'clock tomorrow. Better than Silva is coming up with the new music show. Today's show is produced by Barry O'Neill. Our broadcast coordinator is Jarla Hollins. From all of the Game On team, have a great evening. Ruby and Marie, we'll chat to you tomorrow here at 6.
RTE 2FM.
Right now.
This is
2FM's Game On. This is
2FM.